just another solid day in California. It's just the way that I was raised in California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. It's Owen here. And in a minute, we're going to get to a short conversation I had with Brett Barbier of Cal Poly Baseball and also of the San Luis Obispo Blues. He's catching for the Blues this summer and was an interesting conversation to talk about some of what he's been doing, who he's been catching, a couple of the incoming freshmen we had a chance to see last weekend for the Blues. So hopefully that'll be a fun conversation for Cal Poly fans. But first, you know, you guys probably know I'm a pretty big Los Angeles sports fan. I've liked the Lakers since, you know, the Magic Johnson days. I was talking with somebody about it today about, you know, how much Michael Thompson actually played when he was on the Lakers. And he was a pretty good backup to Kareem for a number of years on the Lakers teams. And I'm also a pretty big Dodger fan. And I wanted to just take a minute to talk about, address, I guess, the whininess that I hear from so many people in and around Los Angeles about a few different situations. So the first one's obviously the Dodgers. The Dodgers are a team that are in first place. They're 5.5 games up on the Giants, 5.5 games up on the Diamondbacks going into today. Today's Friday when I'm taping this intro part of the podcast here. And all I hear and all I see on Twitter is just vitriolic, well, not vitriolic always, but just kind of complaining, you know, nervous complaining from everybody that I see on this on Twitter, nervous complaining from every single person, it seems like, who I see on Facebook, from all the Dodger groups, from a lot of the Dodger bloggers, from a lot of people who surround the Dodgers. And is the Dodgers team perfect? No. Are the Cardinals, you know, I think like almost double digits ahead of them in the standings right now? Yeah. But we know what the standings mean during the regular season, and the answer is not much. We had the Royals and the Giants in the World Series last year. So give me a break if that's really what you're worried about. You do need good pitching to win in the playoffs, but you need hot pitching, not just good pitching. You need hot pitching. Seeing who the Dodgers have going out there every day, if those guys are winning games, and they're winning games, and that's great. Do the Dodgers need another pitcher? Yeah, probably they do. And I would expect them to, get another pitcher in the next, 2 weeks leading up to the non-waiver trade deadline. But I'm kind of tired of hearing how the sky is falling in Dodgerland lately. I know that they're not hitting in some games. There's a game going on right now. They're down 2-0, and they just can't get anything going. They have some, I don't know about holes or whatever, but they have some guys who are kind of, don't always perform together. And when they do, it seems like they hit, you know, 4 home runs and get 5 or 6 runs total off of those in a game to win. I'm sick of it has to be the whiniest fan base of a first place team, I think, that I've heard. And those of you who know I'm a big Dodger fan, and I've been one of the whiners. And I have to check myself even when it comes to some of that, because I can't take it anymore. Honestly, I just can't. I can't take the whininess anymore. This team's gonna win the division by a lot, I think. I think the second half is going to be a good half of the season. It's a team that had their best player coming into the season, their best position player, missed the first quarter of the year or so with a hamstring injury in Yasiel Puig. It's a team that has Carl Crawford, who's missed the season, you know, most of the season so far. And it's a team that still has a 5.5 game lead. It's a team that lost Hyunjin Ryu and Brandon McCarthy, right? They're number 3 and 4 starters coming into the season, and they're still 5.5 games up, and they're guaranteed to be in first place going into the All-Star break. It's a team who has Clayton Kershaw, who's I don't even, I didn't look up his record, but it's not great Clayton Kershaw record. And he's pitched very well, but he hasn't been Clayton Kershaw quite yet over a long period of time. He's ready to kind of kick it up another notch in the second half here. And they're still 5.5 games up. Zach Greinke's been amazing. Adrian Gonzalez has been amazing at times. I saw a Jock Peterson home run a couple months ago that went about 480 feet in Colorado. That was pretty amazing. But, you know, I think I'd be fine with the Dodgers rolling out with Brett Anderson as the number three starter if they got another number four starter that could do something. I don't think Bolsinger's it. I don't think Frias is it in the playoffs. And they're going to need a fourth starter at some point in playoff series. So, you know, I think again, the Dodgers need to do something, but let's not forget where they're at in the standings, given who they've been rolling out every day. Let's not forget that they still have some guys in their farm system who could come up and be good. Guys like Zach Lee, who, you know, have kind of tailed off lately, but who could still be good. And let's stop whining about where they're at. Let's stop being so impatient that we can't wait just a little while. Again, they're 5.5 games up on both the Giants and the Diamondbacks coming into tonight. They have 3 games against the Brewers going into the All-Star break. The Brewers are not a very good team. If you want the Dodgers to do better against good teams, that's understandable. I'm with you there. If you want the Dodgers to maybe play better in the clutch later in the later in the season and in the postseason, I'm totally with you right there. If you still think Clayton Kershaw has something to prove, I'm with you there. Zach Greinke, I don't think has as much to prove, actually. I think he's pretty much amazing. But I hear so much, I guess it's panic or anxiety in Dodger fans' voice, and I'm trying to temper that for myself. So maybe this is me doing some Owen therapy in terms of being a fan, but here we are, and if you're a Dodger fan, let's not be too whiny. Let's not be too anxious about this whole thing. We're in first place right now. If you're a Dodger fan, you're in first place. Let's enjoy it right now and see if we can't make a little bit of a run. See if the Dodgers can't make a little bit of a run going into the second half of the season, and especially into the postseason, which the Dodgers are almost guaranteed of making at this point. It's just a matter of who they play and how they play once they get there. All right, I'll be right back.
They jaw drop, now they jawless. I'm an artist, the hardest today. We all in disarray, I done called this a day. Up and away. Celebrate life to the extreme. Got the great juice bottles, chillin' Wayne Gretzky. Skate through life, make wake like a jet ski. Wake fake as long as the Lord lets me. So get up, get out, and get something. Minuscule trials and tribulations is nothing.
You know, welcome back to the Fansmanship Podcast. The last thing I wanted to deal with before we get to Brett Barbier is, I talked for a little bit under 10 minutes with Brett about the guys that he's seen, the Cal Poly freshman pitchers, both on the Blues and then also on the Menlo Park Legends, who we got a chance to see last weekend. But I wanted to get to the NBA a little bit, and we had this DeAndre Jordan thing, and a lot of people are talking about how crazy DeAndre Jordan is. A lot of people are talking about how he went back on his word. He was definitely a little bit elusive with Mark Cuban, which wasn't a stand-up thing to do or way to be. And, you know, it's really the way that this league's gone over the past, you know, 10 or 15 years in terms of players feeling entitled to not be as upfront and businesslike as they can be, to put it in a way that might be fair to both play might be fair to both the player and DeAndre Jordan, and also to Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks. But I wanted to just quickly address it. If DeAndre Jordan can get $30 million more in guaranteed money by going to by staying with the Clippers instead of going to Dallas, even if he was verbally committed to Dallas. And it does screw Dallas. I get it. It is a bummer for the Mavericks, but everybody's got to understand $30 million is $30 million. $15 million after taxes is $15 million, and a lot can happen with that money. And I think for $15 million, even if I already had, you know, 10 or 15 in the bank, I think for an extra $15 million on a contract that's going to set DeAndre Jordan up pretty much for life at this point, whether he gets injured on day one of training camp this year or not, an extra $15 million or extra $30 million in your contract, it's a big deal. And I do think that if it went down the way that it's being reported that it went down, if guys were, if he wasn't getting back to Mark Cuban, if his agent wasn't getting back to the Mavericks, if all that was, you know, wasn't happening on the up and up, then I understand that Mark Cuban would be frustrated. And I think you could even call DeAndre, you know, a little bit, you know, I don't know what the word is. What should I say? Like, not businesslike, a little bit juvenile about how he handled the situation, sitting and playing cards with his Clipper teammates in Texas. But when it comes down to it, guys, $30 million is $30 million, and I would probably do a whole lot worse things than renege on a verbal agreement for an additional $30 million. I'm just saying. So let's try to keep some headspace. I know a lot of Laker fans were up in arms over it because of the fact that the Clippers probably, you know, got DeAndre, and DeAndre, you know, really kind of completes that roster in a really nice way. But you know, let's contextualize it a little bit. If you're in DeAndre's shoes, you're right. Maybe you shouldn't make that verbal commitment in the first place if there's any chance of you going back to the Clippers. But you know, players want to be wined and dined in different ways nowadays. It's really amazing how free agency works for some guys and differently for others. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge wanted to hear about basketball-related stuff from the Lakers. The Lakers tried to sell him on non-basketball-related things. Maybe DeAndre Jordan wanted to be sold on teammate-type stuff. And, you know, his teammates showed up. And so, you know, that was a deciding factor maybe for him, along with the $30 million, 15 after taxes, right? And all that's, everything's paid off. $30 million is nothing to joke about, guys. And you got to ask yourself, what would you do for an additional $30 million on a contract like that? Because I don't think you would have probably reneged, or I don't think you would have maybe thought twice to reneg. Maybe you would have. And like I said, maybe you wouldn't have made that decision in the first place. But these are guys who don't have a ton of business experience. I don't know how long DeAndre has been, you know, in the league for. Probably less than, you know, 5 or 6 years. He's an athletic guy. This is his first real big contract, I think. And you know, again, $30 million is $30 million. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Hope you guys relax a little bit about DeAndre. I hope you guys relax a little bit about the Dodgers. If you're in LA land, it's not a bad time to be a sports fan right now. There's a lot of interesting storylines, and the Clippers are one of them. I think the Clippers are kind of a high-profile train wreck on some level, but I think they're an interesting storyline nonetheless. The Dodgers could be the highest-profile train wreck, or they could be a team that's kind of destined to win something given all the things that they've been through and given all the players that they have. I mean, they've just amassed ridiculous talent, so let's enjoy that talent. Let's enjoy watching it. Let's enjoy what the future holds. Let's not get caught up, guys. Everybody in Dodgerland is so caught up. Let's relax a little bit, please. All right. This is the fansmanship.com podcast. We're going to take a quick break and be back with Brett Barbier from the Blues this summer. And he'll be a senior catcher and senior on the Cal Poly baseball team next season. This is the fansmanship.com podcast.
True. So, how's the offseason going so far, Brett? I mean, you're playing for the Blues. It's seems like it's been okay.
It's going pretty good so far. It's exciting. Playing with a bunch of cool guys. You know, that's the best part about summer ball is you get to play with guys from all over the country, people you're probably never going to meet otherwise. And, it's great, especially playing in San Luis Obispo, being able to live at home and play here with John and a couple of the incoming guys who are coming in too, get to know them before we all step on campus together in September. Yeah. So it's pretty exciting, and the competition's good, so it kind of keeps everyone on their toes. And so it's pretty nice.
Where'd you play summer ball last year?
I played in the Northwoods. I played for the Wilmer Stingers in Minnesota.
So Mundell was up there, Van Gansen was up there.
And Shutnik was up there as well. Okay. So it was all of us were up there. We were playing, I think I played about 50 games while I was up there. Okay. And I missed like a quarter of the summer season. We ended up making playoffs and we played a bunch of games, which was cool, it was exciting, but I didn't feel like taking those five-hour bus rides like I had to take last summer to go play.
Is that what it was sometimes, just all over? Is it with Wisconsin mostly?
It's Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Canada. We travel all over there. Wow. And you're traveling like sometimes 13 hours to go play a doubleheader or something like that. Wow. So it's a lot of bus rides. It really simulates what minor league baseball is kind of like and all the bus rides. So that was kind of exciting to get a little taste of that. And like that, too, you're playing against some of the best kids in the country. So that's always exciting.
How does like the competition, I know like California can be like widely varying in terms of the competition, but how does like the league stuff compare here and there?
I would say they're pretty similar. I mean, granted we don't play as many games and I think maybe the pitching might be a little better. You get a little up there. Uh-huh. I mean, you just face more aces from more like top high end programs than you do here. But position player wise, I still feel like, I mean, our team, we have SEC guys, we have Big Ten guy, Big East guys. We have some guys from huge schools that come out here and play. And so I think that defense and offensive wise, it's pretty similar. And you're gonna face guys that are throwing 93 to 94 here too, just not as frequent as you would in Northwoods.
Is Northwoods kind of like considered like the second best behind Cape Cod, do you think?
Yeah.
In terms of how people think about it? Alaska League, I know, is usually pretty good.
Alaska League's pretty good up there. The California League, though, is in the top four. It's usually like Cape, Northwoods, and then sometimes the California League, just depending, or the West Coast League. It just depends. But they say the Northwoods League is kind of becoming one of the best leagues in the country compared to the Cape, just because of the amount of games you play and the competition. It makes everyone kind of makes it.
You're like a pro.
Yeah, playing out there. Exactly. It makes a good predictor of what the future is going to be like if you do get drafted in the spring. So
tell me about last, like, you know, you're a catcher, but you played a lot of left field 2 years ago at Cal Poly. Did you go to the Northwoods League like, hey, I'm going to catch up there? Or how much did you catch before last year? Like, was that kind of part of the deal?
I went to the Northwoods, as a catcher. Okay. And then I actually got a call from Coach Lee, and he's like, hey, you know, we want you to work in at left on your off days and, you know, get some reps in the outfield. So I was like, and I didn't mind that. I mean, whatever gets you in the lineup, that's what I've always told myself. So I was like, okay, and I ended up playing a good amount of left in my off days in the Northwoods, and then I came in the fall, and they're like, hey, you know, you're going to play a good amount of left for us in the fall, and I would catch like a day or whatever in the fall, and then I'd play left. And then in the start of the season, I started in left for like maybe the first 15 games until Luzinski went down with his labrum.
Right.
And then I caught, what, I think like maybe 40 games after that or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Were you a catcher in high school?
Yeah, I've been catching since I was about 12 years old, so almost my whole life.
So that wasn't like a huge adjustment for you. Okay, I was kind of wondering about that, because I know like you came in and subbed for Chris 2 years ago sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From here, but you know, he was like an everyday guy.
Yeah,
so.
He played every game. Right. I don't know how he did it. I mean, I only caught 40, and he played every day, and I was amazed at how he pulled it off.
Do you feel toasted at the end of a college season, like in terms of like physically?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, you're tired, but as long as you take care of yourself. As it went on, I talked to Chris more because I was really...
Call him up in Florida?
I'd call him in Florida and be like, dude, how did you do this? How'd you catch 54 games or however many your senior year? And he's like, dude, I just, you know, stretched a lot. And then I started kind of taking advice from him and did ice baths and try to keep myself in good shape and worked out. So
is that kind of what you're hoping to be this year in terms of a consistent catcher?
I mean, I'd love to catch almost every game again behind the plate this year. But I mean, wherever they need me and wherever they want me to play, as long as I'm in the lineup every day, I mean, I'll do whatever it takes. I don't have to catch. I can play left. I can play anywhere they need me. So I'm not complaining. It's just as long as I get to swing the bat. Yeah,
so we took a picture today. It was you and Bobby I or A? I don't know.
It's Bobby I.
I, okay. And and Nigel Ward, mm-hmm. and two pitchers from Menlo Park, too. We had Mike. What's Mike's last name? I don't know. Mike. I'll remember it. Hopefully Mike's not listening too closely to this. And Tommy from Menlo Park. You faced Mike on Friday. Did you face Tom yesterday?
I did not face Tom. I didn't play yesterday. Yeah. But
you saw him pitch yesterday. He's a lefty.
He did a really good job.
Yeah, so
both of them.
So tell me what you saw from those guys, and then I'll ask you about what you see from the guys on the Blues so far this year.
What's his name that threw on Friday?
Mike,
yeah, he did a good job. He good velo on his fastball. I was surprised when I first stepped in that first pitch that I thought maybe he was going to throw like 88, and then I stepped in there and he was sitting around 91, 92.
Yeah.
So that was exciting to see, especially, you know, as
a
hitter.
That's a pretty noticeable difference as a hitter, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That 4 miles an hour is a big step up. And, you know, it's exciting because we definitely want to see guys coming out of our bullpen and coming into next year that are going to be throwing hard. And we need that because we don't have very many guys that throw that hard. So that was good to see. And then the lefty that came up on the mound
yesterday,
Thomas, yeah. I need to get their names down.
Tommy Tweets is his Twitter handle.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he threw really well from what I saw. He was getting guys out. He put a bunch of zeros up against us on the board. So, and he only threw, I think he maybe threw
a couple innings.
Maybe two,
yeah.
And he did a really good job from what I saw. So that was exciting to see. It's something good to look forward to. And he's a strike thrower, too, from the left side. So that's good. That's good to see.
Yeah, I mean, you guys didn't have a ton of lefties last year except for Taylor. So,
yeah
it'll be good to get some southpaws in the mix. I was talking to the Santa Barbara catcher on Friday. He's a freshman coming in. He's one of the catchers on Menlo.
Yeah.
He told me Mike was throwing pretty hard.
Oh yeah,
pretty consistently. So that's exciting for Cal Poly fans. How about from the Blues' point of view? Tell me about Bobby and what he looks like out there.
Bobby's good. I was really impressed when I first caught him the first day. He's throws about four different pitches for strikes. Great confidence in his changeup, and I mean he likes to pound fastball changeup until they prove that they can hit fastball or change, which is like something you really like to see as a pitch caller, because most pitchers just like their breaking ball, and it's tough to throw a breaking ball to the opposite side of the hitter because a lot of pitchers can't command it. But I mean, he commands both sides of the plate. He has a good mound presence too, which I like to see, and he just likes to get after it. And he just wants the ball no matter what the situation is. He's like, give me the ball, we're fine. Like, gets back up on the mound, is ready to throw strikes, and I love to see that bulldog mentality. And I know our coaching staff will love that, because I mean, you want to see that from your pitcher on the mound, because that just sparks, you know, lights a little fire under your defense and makes everyone want to kind of make big plays for you.
Got it. And then Nigel, I haven't seen yet. I have seen Bobby a little bit, but I haven't seen Nigel yet. Tell me about what he looks like.
Nigel is funky, really funky, real funky windup. He like throws completely across his body.
Left-handed or right-handed?
Righty. Uh-huh. Deceptive, good sink to his fastball.
Okay.
And he doesn't throw hard. He's more of a setup guy, but it's his delivery is so out of the ordinary and kind of sidearm.
For like an inning or two, if you haven't seen him,
exactly,
it's
really going to throw you off. So if he goes through the lineup one time, you know, he's really going to get a lot of outs. He's going to mess with a lot of guys, which is good because, I mean, that's another guy to come for our team next year, which is going to be really good for us.
Right, depth-wise, I think, you know, you guys are losing a lot of pitching. Lost, I mean, pitching's been basically all the way turned over the past 2 years at this point.
Yeah, which is pretty crazy.
You know, aside from maybe Justin and Slater, I think. And, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about needing depth, I mean, you got Kyle coming back, Justin Slater, and the other freshman from last year.
Yeah, we have Miggy, and we have all those guys coming back. So, which would be good because that adds, you know, a lot of the freshmen got a good amount of innings. So that kind of adds a little maturity, and that'll help some of the young guys coming in.
It's going to be kind of a battle for pitching rotation spots next
year. Oh, yeah. And that was what they kind of planned on, because last year we didn't really have as much of a battle for it. But this year they really wanted to get, you know, it to be a dogfight out there, which is good because it makes everyone kind of stay on their toes and really work hard for that spot in the lineup, which, I mean, is good. Competition's always good. So.
All right, well, cool. Hey, have a – and, if people want to come out, man, have a – yeah, I'm definitely going to push that, you know. Yeah.
It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision, and the people on the
streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up. Signs out on